Welcome to the Salt City Hoops podcast. I'm Spencer Hall. I'm here with Jazz Hype's Justin Davies, who can be found at JHJustin on Twitter. Bit of a change there. And of course, I can be found at Salt City Hoops on Twitter. Justin, first, just to get us started, a lot of people are worried about the name change. Can you give us a little background?
Yeah, well, I'll still be tweeting at Jazz Hype as well. Jazz Hype was a joint venture by my cousin and myself. And so we both, you know, like the avenue to reach out with the fans and kind of talk about the Jazz through Jazz Hype. So just kind of give my personal voice out there in a way to connect, because I know just everyone's dying to connect with me as a person because I am that charming and witty. So I kind of put that out there as a way to just kind of connect with fans a little bit more personally.
Okay. JHJustin.
That's right. JHJustin.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just jump right in. The big topic, of course, the Jazz on Monday night just lost a brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, you know, Bill Simmons has his stomach punch game and all those. I don't know where it falls into that category, but
beyond that at this point,
it was just a brutal way to lose. And especially with the Jazz made the decision to kind of give the young players a lot of run. Mm-hmm. The big story was that Millsap and Jefferson were sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
While Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward and Jeremy Evans got a lot of run, and they made a game of it. They got back in. It was the lowly Wizards.
Yeah.
They, at the time, one road win on the season eventually turned into their second road win.
Yes.
Road Warriors.
Yes.
And but you could tell from the reaction of the crowd, you could tell from the way the energy was there, that right now, with the season going the way it is, that's what the fans want to see. They want to see the young guys out there. I saw some things I liked. What did you think about that fourth quarter?
I definitely saw some things I liked. I loved seeing that. I loved seeing that Coach Corbin kind of not only gave the young guys some run, but we've seen a couple games in the past where some young guys will get in there, give the team a run, and then in comes Raja Bell and in comes some of the starters, and a lot of that energy goes away with that. So I really like that he stuck with that. I like that he's saying now that he's looking at giving, maybe starting Hayward and Favors, maybe giving them and acknowledging that he needs to give them more time at this point of the season, because the playoff dream is dead at this point. You know, statistically they're not eliminated yet, but realistically this team is done. So I loved what I saw from them. I think Hayward's been playing great lately. And Favors and Hayward, just from a defensive standpoint, because that's what I saw a huge difference in as well in that run, is they really they went in that zone and they clamped down on defense between, you know, Ronnie Price and Gordon Hayward and Favors and Evans as well. They were a defensive step up from the guys they came in replacing. Hayward, a vast leap defensively ahead of Raja Bell. And Favors being a better defensive presence than both Jefferson and Millsap.
Yeah, I think you're right. I actually specifically asked Ty Corbin after the game if he was going to start the rookies. He said he wasn't ready to go that far.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty clear that you know, that he's just going to give the young guys an extended chance. So that brings up the next question. You know, a lot of people have been attacking Brian Smith of the Salt Lake Tribune, Trib Jazz on Twitter, kind of accusing him of having an axe to grind with Al Jefferson. I kind of threw my hat in the ring a little bit last night on Twitter, kind of not really defending the way Brian Smith is covering it, because he doesn't need me to defend him, you know, but he can take care of himself. But I think the point that he was making on a lot of the things, he's simply been reporting
the
behavior that Al Jefferson is doing. I don't think he has an agenda or that he's trying to do it. I mean, I was surprised some of the reaction from the fans that sent messages to me they said things like, he doesn't need to do this, or kind of making the assumption that he's stirring the pot.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of strange, because, you know, he's not the PR guy for the Jazz. It's not his job to make everything rosy. And so, but as I thought about it some more, though, I thought, you know, a lot of people also said to me, well, I wouldn't want to talk to the press either if I was having a rough stretch and all they were doing was asking questions. But, I mean, come on.
That's part of the job description, isn't it?
Yeah. And the questions that are being asked by the Utah Press, no one, like, it's a softball club. Yeah. We're all, I'm not saying that I'm in there asking the tough questions either, but I mean, we're asking the questions that need to be asked, but we're all pleasant enough.
Yeah.
Everyone that's in there is respectful. And so I think that's all anyone asks is common respect. But then to take it a step further, it's a requirement that the players talk to the press. So Al Jefferson, he tried to sneak out without talking to the press. One of the PR guy of the Jazz tried to get him to stop. He paused for a second, and then he just said no, and he kept going. So I don't know if, you know, if we have to, like, submit a request to the Professional Basketball Writers Association and have them submit a claim, and he gets fined. I'm not interested in, like, costing a guy money. But for the beat writers who actually are getting paid for their quotes and the things that they get, that is completely disrespectful to them because they have a job to do too. And I just think, you know, I'm not going to call in a fine on Al Jefferson, but at the same time, somebody probably will, and it's just money out of his pocket. And I just think the a couple of things about Al Jefferson that need to be talked about. Number one, he hasn't been good with the press at all. And a lot of it is just kind of, you know, excuse me. Somebody will ask a question when he's there and he's kind of, well, that's a dumb question. He'll try to mumble, you know, and just not respectful to the answers or to their time. And even when, like, Steve Brown is asking super softball questions, he's just not even being respectful to him. And so it's turned off a lot of people in the media who just think, you know, why are you acting like that? You know, nobody's trying to make you look bad. Nobody's trying to. So I think a lot of it's frustration. You know, he's been, you know, on these losing teams for most of his career. I'm not here to say that it's always his fault, but overall, you just look in the locker room right now and there's absolutely no leadership at all.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought it was bad when Darren was there, you know, we thought it was bad when Boozer was there. But now, I mean, you just keep thinking you can't get any worse, and it gets worse. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously, guys have injuries. I think things are going to be totally different when they have a healthy team come next fall. But for right now, it's just not there. But one other thing I wanted to talk about with Al Jefferson. So back when Darren Williams was still on the team, you know, there were stories written about Darren taking him out to dinner and saying, I'm going to make you an MVP or an all-star and things like that. I'm not saying that didn't happen. I'm sure it was reported. I'm sure it happened. But I don't think anything came of it beyond that. Because
so you're just saying their relationship wasn't all that tight?
Yeah, no, they were never chummy. And in fact, it was awkward. I mean, there were a lot of times in the locker room where Darren would kind of be I think Al's a little bit country, and I think some of the other guys they don't seem like they really get his vibe. And so Darren would kind of tease him a little bit. And it would seem like Al would take it for a minute, and then would kind of like retaliate back and just amp things up to an entirely different level. Mm. So Darren's just kind of teasing him, and he comes back and makes it personal.
Gotcha.
And then all of us are sitting there in the locker room kind of like, awkward, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So I don't think those two ever really like saw eye to eye. And so now as I think back, I had some conversations last night with some people that have, you know, some longtime Utah press people, and kind of going back to the Jerry Sloan leaving and was it Darren or was it, and I just, you know, Matt Mitnick still comes to the arena sometimes. Jerry Sloan's wife and Kevin O'Connor's wife are still chummy and they're still hanging out at the arena since that time. And so I've heard that, you know, really, it just kind of came down to, with Jerry Sloan, his wife talking to him and his health. Maybe he had, you know, concerned about his health and that he had kind of thought people weren't listening anymore. And that was his term, that people aren't listening. So I don't think it was specifically about Darren. And I've wondered, as I thought about it more, I thought it might just be Al Jefferson a little bit on that front, that I don't think he's maybe not listening, but you heard somebody asked him what Ty Corbin told him about getting those technicals, and he said something like,
he kind of joked it off.
Yeah, he was like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't really remember what he said to me, something like this, and just kind of, he made light of the situation.
Exactly, and I think he might have been partially telling the truth, that he might not just remember. And I think there's something to that. I don't think he really knows the plays or gets it or whatever. And maybe that was a lot of Darren's frustration right there.
I think it was clear at the beginning of the season that, that Jefferson wasn't meshing in. And it was one of those things where there was a lot of apologies going on his front. Well, it's a complex system to learn and you know, give it time. Al will come around. He'll learn. But he really just seemed to me like a square peg trying to fit in a round hole for a good deal of the first part of the season. And he really took off when Darren left because he was basically the only option there was. But even then, it wasn't so much Al fitting into the system. It was Al working in the low post, and he was beasting it. But how many of that was translating into wins? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely see what you're saying there, and I think that there's some, I think there's some credence to that thought.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to bury Al Jefferson.
No,
and I
not at
and
all.
And I'm not trying to make him a scapegoat either.
He's been playing hard. There's
right.
no doubt that he's been playing hard. I'm not trying to put that out there. I just think it's been such an interesting dynamic on Twitter the last few days. I was at the Dallas game when he got ejected. And it just seemed like such a weird play for me. I had a hard time seeing exactly what went on or why he got the technical in the first place, and I wasn't able to rewind it. But just the manner, he was just begging to get tossed out of that game. And, you know, the frustration for him has been on the forefront for a while now. But it's just been so odd to me how last night the Jazz fans were piling on Brian Smith and they were piling on Ronnie Price. And, you know, their Jazz fans are frustrated, but I thought it was odd that those are the two people that seem to gain the most ire from Jazz fans. Ronnie Price, who's out there playing on a bad foot, who isn't an all-star. He's a third-string point guard. And, yeah, maybe he took a three that was too soon into the shot clock that he shouldn't have, but he was a big part of the reason why John Wall didn't score any points in the second half after he lit the team up in the first half. Ronnie Price is a pretty good defender. So I just thought it was weird that, you know, here's this guy out there giving his all on the court and playing tough, which is something Jazz fans usually respond to. And this media guy who's just reporting what he's seeing, he's tweeting, Al Jefferson's at the end of the bench. Al Jefferson's not in the huddle. Al Jefferson's staring ahead. Al Jefferson's not listening to Coach Corbin. And I found it so strange that those two were getting all of the ire from Jazz fans instead of Al Jefferson, who's pouting, or instead of an Andre Kirilenko who's out with another injury, or, you know, not to say that Andre should be getting the brunt of the Jazz fans' rage, but I thought those were two strange culprits for me. I couldn't quite understand why.
I totally agree, and I even had some people, I said, I kind of came to Ronnie Price's defense as well, and I just kind of said, you know, as much as you boo him, he's not going to be Ray Allen.
No.
And that's what I thought. I mean, the guy has maximized his potential. I mean, physically, what do they list him at? 6 foot?
Yeah.
You know, I'm 6'2". I'm 6'2", and he doesn't even come up, you know, halfway up my face.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a big dude. And the fact that he can jump the way he can when he's healthy, can get after it. This goes back to a discussion we had a couple weeks ago, too, when people were saying that they would rather have talent than hustle. And I get what you're saying, that he's just not as good as a lot of players in the NBA.
Yeah.
And so I have no problem with a fan wanting to replace him. That's totally fine. Like, but to me, it's a front office problem. It's not a Ronnie Price
problem. Exactly.
I mean, you got a guy that's injured. He's been out. He's probably playing a lot more minutes than he would. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he's probably getting back into game shape, playing on a bad foot, doing the best he can. So I just don't get, why would you boo the guy? I mean, he was completely gassed. I mean, he airballed three, airballed a free throw, and bounced it off his foot.
Yeah.
And he's got to just, I mean, nobody wants to do that in front of the home fans and in front of the...
But the guy's a third string point guard.
Right.
That's what I think people don't understand.
And he's already like, he's not only that, he's a kid, he from here at UVU, he's, you know, nobody even really looked at him. He's just overlooked all the time.
Yeah, undrafted.
And so I've got nothing but respect for him having the NBA career that he's had.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I thought that was very, very odd. You know, anyway, I think it's just going to be a different story once they get a full roster. It's going to be, we can't project so much with the labor negotiations and things that are going to happen. But I really think this team, they're not going to be a contender for the title next year by any means, but I think they're going to be a playoff team next year.
Calling it.
Yeah.
Playoff team.
Yeah. I think they're going to go for the 8th spot again next year.
And
but I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league.
No. No, and that's what's been so strange to me is you look at this team talent-wise, they're not the worst team in the league or anything close to it. There has been such a lack of chemistry. And a lot of that is injuries, but you just look at some of these games that they haven't been at. That New Orleans game was one of the strangest losses I've seen in a long time. That, you know, the bank shot prayer by Okafor. And so it's one of those seasons where everything seems to be bouncing the wrong way, and it's been easy to drift. I've drifted in and out of the camp. You know, I got really excited about the future. I got really depressed about the future, and I can't quite stabilize myself and decide, where's this team going to be? Favors and Hayward seem like they have a bright future, but are those, you know, can this team model themselves after what Denver's doing right now as the no-star team? Do they have that level of talent? Obviously, right now they don't have that level of talent, or they'd be winning more games than they are. So is it a matter of getting guys healthy? Is it a matter of striking at gold in the draft? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. You know,
that's the thing. We can all try and project all
the thing
that
I'm thinking of right now. Everyone wants to know, is Ty Corbin the coach of the future? Well, they've already signed him to a multi-year deal. So, yeah, I don't see them. I've seen nothing but loyalty from the front office towards Ty Corbin. Yeah. So,
which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I do too. And I think on the one hand, since it's kind of a lost season right now, it's probably good that he's getting this training on the job in a lost season rather than having to start next season, totally new coach. I mean, like you said, in the New Orleans game where he made the mistake of not having Millsap miss that free throw, mm-hmm. I mean, those are the little nuances of coaching that you get in your hip pocket as you go along. So if Jerry had finished out the season and then Ty, you know, had a weird off season with a lockout and everything.
And
then probably no summer league.
Yeah.
And then we're to start fresh.
Short training camp.
I think this is actually going to be better for the team. That being said, I still think it's crazy that all they got for Deron Williams was, you know, draft picks and Devin Harris. But anyway, that's another topic.
that's a whole other deal.
Yeah.
So looking to the future then, do you see the team kind of standing pat as is and going with draft picks, or do you see them making a trade? Are Jefferson and Millsap your combo for the future?
I think you stick with Millsap. I think
he has been such a beast lately.
Yeah, I just think you got to stick with him. What you do, I think, is you get a time machine and you go back and you keep Wes Matthews.
Oh my goodness, yes, please.
You know, but we talked about this before we went on the air, but Kevin Arnovitz, you know, ESPN writer, he tweeted that you don't build around Hayward and Favors, but you build with them.
Yeah, they're great complements.
And I think he's right. Yeah. I don't think they are the marquee players that are the foundation of the team, but they're like a Udonis Haslam, you know, they're like a glue. They're both, I think, solid glue guys that are going to have nice long careers. And I saw moments of them playing together where I thought, are we going to, 5 years from now, are we going to be seeing those two, you know, as you know, great solid players and think back, wow, how crazy was it when they were 19 and 20, 21, whatever, playing together. So the other one thing I want to say about Favors, it's just he's shown more beast in a few flashes than I think I said before, than a whole generation of Jazz big men.
Yeah, that dunk he threw down, I don't even remember who it was, just straight over the top of, I think it was Jian Lian or whatever, Yi.
Jian Lian.
Yeah. No, just straight up, you're like you said, beast.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement around the potential this kid has.
And then it's so shocking to talk to him after the game, and he's shy. He's a shy kid. He's just so mild-mannered, and, you know, all the microphones are stuck in his face, and he's talking. And it's just the contrast between how big he is and then how humble and quiet he is. It's really surprising. You don't expect that kind of a demeanor to come out of a guy.
And that goes back to a point you've made several times before, in that, you know, with Jazz fans getting so nervous about how are we going to be able to keep people in this market? Are we able to do people want to be here? Mm-hmm. A guy like Favors, I don't think he cares. He doesn't need to be in New York or L.A.
No, exactly.
I'm sure he's content to stay here and play here.
I think there are a lot of guys like that. And we've said it before, you know, your LeBrons and your guys like that, they're going to go where they're going to go.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of solid players that you can build around in this league that have no interest in doing anything other than playing basketball.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, I think, you know, Favors is one.
Speaking of the young guys, let's talk real quick about Jeremy Evans. He got some extended time last night. There was a good write-up on Salt City Hoops about Jeremy Evans and, you know, what kind of future he has? What do you see from him? Do we see a starting
I thought, I had just watched him, you know, from the front row of the Flash games, the D-League games, just a couple weeks ago when he got sent down, did a little assignment in the D-League. And so to go from watching him play in the D-League to all of a sudden watching him get crunch time minutes, shooting crunch time free throws in a packed Energy Solutions arena in an NBA game, that's such a trip for those guys who are in their first couple years in the league who are going back and forth. And the same with Othias Jeffers, who was playing on the other side, you know, a longtime D-League guy, you know, did a little quick stint with the Jazz and stuff. So cool to see him getting extended burn. And in the locker room afterwards, he's such a nice guy. It was so cool to see, you know, six or seven reporters all around Othias Jeffers asking him questions, super just happy to be there and happy to contribute. And he was super happy that they weren't going to be in the record books because, you know, the record is a 1-40 road record. And so they weren't the worst team in history. And he was pretty excited about that. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of shocking to see these guys, the D-League guys. There's such a difference between the D-League and the NBA. And it's funny that there's that go-between. One thing I want to say before I forget about it, though.
Yeah.
The D-League has been on my mind. And, you know, with the pending lockout and some of these things, you know, there's been talk about contraction. But I just, that just seems like so ridiculous. How do you go to a Milwaukee team and say, hey, even though you have a viable team and you have an ownership group and you have fans, we're shutting you down?
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, David Stern's not going to do that. It's impossible.
Doesn't want to
do that. Yeah. So I want to throw on the table, I think it's probably equally unlikely. But I think, why don't you take four teams, if that's what you want to contract, and you just put them in the D-League? And so you just do relegation. And then you talk about promotion, like you say.
Going the old English.
Yeah, English-style soccer.
Style soccer,
you know?
European-style soccer.
So maybe you relegate two teams to the D-League, and then you say every year two teams are going to go down, two teams are going to go up, and you relegate. Because eventually, you know, maybe the Bakersfield Jam are playing on regular rotation.
The main Red Claw's up in there.
Exactly. So I just think that it's a way for the NBA to maintain presence in a lot of these cities, and then also, you know, avoid having the dilution of talent. And then I think it builds up the D-League. I think it makes the D-League a viable option. So you're contracting and you're expanding at the same time.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Physics. And I haven't heard anybody mention this idea, by the way.
Unlike you, I don't think I see it happening, but it's a really interesting idea.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, there are a lot of reasons why it doesn't work. First of all, like you
money.
Can't. But you can't have, like right now, there's such a difference in, like a Skyforce crowd, you know, or a Dakota Wizards crowd versus, you know, even the worst showing in the league in the NBA. It's still,
yeah,
a long shot. So it's just there's a big difference there, but I think it's a way to kind of bring
big difference
both
in arenas too, and practice facilities and all that stuff.
But anyway, let's talk about Evans. Tell me what you see from the string bean.
I never can feel confident one way or another as to what my opinion is, because he just comes in with those flashes, and I just get so infatuated with those flashes that I worry that I'm selling him too high in my own mind, because he gets up and throws down an alley-oop, or he skies up and gets a block, or you know, I grasp onto those things and I'm overlooking some of his faults maybe. And so when I say Evans needs to get more time, I really like this kid, I'm worried that it's just these flashes that I'm grasping onto and I'm not digging deep enough into, you know, what makes him as a basketball player.
Yeah, I keep wondering if he's just Keon Clark without the drug and alcohol problem, you know,
which actually wouldn't be terrible at all.
No, that's a great upside.
Keon Clark without the problems.
He had a nice career going there.
I think he
definitely right now doesn't have the impact that I think Favors and Hayward have.
No,
but you know, he also wasn't a lottery pick.
Yeah, he was a second rounder.
Yeah,
so
I see good things from him. I think he's a great kid. I think he works hard, and I think there's going to be a place for him in the league.
Oh, certainly. So the one thing I want to ask, another thing I want to ask you about that I've read, is a lot of talk about this potential lineup of Jefferson at the five, Favors at the four, Millsap at the three. Do you see that working out? Can Millsap play the three?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's remarkably quick And I think he's shown range. I don't think there's any question that he can handle it on the offensive side. That everybody, the question is really on the defensive side.
And quickness.
Yeah. And I think why not, you know, give it a try. I'm open to anything.
Yeah. At this point, you have to be.
Yeah.
Right.
I think we've got a couple games to give that a try.
I looking at it personally, I think that's your, because I just keep looking at next season and wondering, is Al Jefferson staying on the Jazz the best thing for both parties? You know, he's been putting up great numbers. He's put the team on his back, but he's not a leader. He's not a guy I want to build my franchise around. And I don't know. I think playing him alongside of Favors is going to negate some of his defensive liabilities. And that's one reason I see, you know, you have to look at this lineup and give it a whirl. But if there's an attractive trade for Al Jefferson, me personally, if I'm sitting in Kevin O'Connor's shoes, I make that trade.
Yeah, I do too. I was thinking about that last night as well. And I think that's a move that they should make.
Yeah. But. And I you know, I feel a lot of Jazz fans have come to Jefferson's defense. He's a likable guy, and we've seen, you know, them piling on Brian Smith about this, but I don't know. I don't see him as being a piece to build around. I think he's kind of like we were saying about Hayward and Favors. He's a good complementary piece, but you've got to have someone else to be the cornerstone for your franchise.
And that's the problem, though. I think that's kind of the trade-off with him, though, is he seems like he would be better to have somebody else as the main show, but then he demands so much time from the shot clock that it's almost like he can't be anything but the main guy. He gets it, he holds it, 10 seconds go by. It's like it's 1991 or, you know.
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, Charles Barkley is going to back it down in the paint. So, yeah, I just don't see that. I do have to admit, though, that like all the fake Trib Jazz, like, have you seen that?
I haven't seen the fake Trib Jazz, no.
Yeah, fake, I think it was fake Trib Jazz or not the real Trib Jazz, something. Anyway, that was pretty funny there. So
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I do enjoy, there was a discussion about the fake accounts, and, you know, they're pretty hit and miss, but sometimes, you know, the fake Kevin O'Connor does make me chuckle every now and then.
Yeah, that was good. So coming up this Friday is the Lakers.
That, can I tell you one, my biggest concern about that game, if I'm a Jazz fan and I'm going to that game,
a 60-point loss?
Well, even more than that, because you're expecting a loss at this point,
yeah,
is the fact that there's a very good chance in my mind, and I could be wrong on this, that there will be more gold in that crowd than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's the real problem, is like avoiding the temptation to punch Laker fans in the face.
Because I was at the Celtics game.
And there were Laker fans.
There were Laker.
And there were Laker. I saw that too. It's Jazz Celtics. Yeah. And there are people wearing Laker gear in the arena. Like, yeah. What are they doing, scouting the Celtics?
It's absurd. And there were Lakers fans there. And there was a ton of Celtics fans there, more than I would have expected. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a frustrating experience being at your home floor, cheering on your team, and having there be a loud contingent for the other team. It just boils your blood. There's something about it that just, it infuriates you.
Yeah. Well, luckily the guy that makes the bird noises hasn't been around.
And I haven't heard him on TV.
There was somebody making goat noises last game. Yeah. I don't know what's up with the barnyard noises. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to, I think it's going to be a great environment and everything. But yeah, just whenever the Laker, the other thing that I liked, one of the Laker games, there was a guy in a full Laker gear, you know, had like warm up sweat, you know, the pants were the warm ups. And then he had like an Artest jersey on or whatever. And then he had a Lamar Odom jersey over his shoulder.
Of course.
So he brought two jerseys.
Two jerseys, yeah.
Was it just in case he needed to change?
Well, or in case, you know,
away?
If Artest gets tossed out, he's got to toss on the Odom one. Or,
unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it only makes sense.
Yeah.
Laker fans, what else can you expect?
I know. It's going to be interesting, though. Now that the Jazz are probably eliminated, who are you going to throw your weight behind as the playoffs come on? Or do you not roll that way? Are you a sports bigamist like that?
I'm not a sports bigamist at all. In fact, you know, I always, the Jazz are my people. So I wouldn't say like, I'm a fan of this team, but I enjoy watching other teams. And, you know, I always want to see the Lakers lose. But I usually take it on a series by series basis. Mm. I like the new look Nuggets, which is a hard thing for me because I've hated the Nuggets for so long. But there's just something I like about that. I like the thought of them kind of sticking it to the whole, this is a Stars League mentality, and sticking it to Carmelo and making a deep run in the playoffs. I like George Karl. And so I can see myself kind of getting behind that team a little bit. It's always fun to watch the Thunder play, even though they're, you know, they're kind of the media darling. Mm-hmm. They're just fun to watch. It's really something that I'll usually the underdog, and then I'll just watch it on a series by series basis, and whoever's playing against LA probably.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
I'm interested to see how well Chicago does, being the Jazz East.
Yeah.
Because they're playing some phenomenal ball right now.
Yeah, they really are. It's impressive. It's really impressive. What do you think about Derrick Rose for MVP?
I've actually talked about this a couple times on Twitter. The whole MVP discussion to me is one of the funniest aspects of any professional sports league. The way people get so worked
up. Because there's not a true criteria.
No.
So you're arguing about two different things. Does it mean you made your team better? Does it mean you're the best player? Mm-hmm. Does it mean your team won the most? Is it an individual award? Is it a team award?
Yeah, and people get so bent out of shape about it. Yeah. Like, and to me, it goes back to when Karl Malone won his first MVP, and Jordan and all the, you know, the nation that was so obsessed with Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan
had won too many times.
And so they had to give it to somebody.
Yeah, and they took it so personally, like, oh, how dare you besmirch Jordan's greatness by not awarding him the MVP. And it's just an award. Yeah. It's not that big a deal to me. So if Rose gets the MVP, more power to him. He's playing on one of the better teams and he's playing some great ball. Is he the best player in basketball? No, he's probably not the best player in basketball. Is he an MVP candidate? Absolutely. I don't know. I think it's entertaining to watch people get so worked up into
it. Is. Well, I think we're back in a time where, you know, three of the biggest markets have the best teams. Yep. So you've got, you know, Boston, Chicago, and LA mm-hmm. with, you know, great teams right now. And it's like, you know, I host the Daily Dime. You know, when there are games, I'm in there on the DDL. And we make jokes because it's like, if you bring up Kobe or you bring up LeBron or you bring up Derrick Rose, you get this certain segment of fans who are just completely irrational.
Yeah.
And, you know, misspellings and exclamation marks and capital letters. And you can almost hear them like pounding their keyboard.
Yep.
It's an odd phenomenon, but I want that to happen to the Jazz. You know? Sometime I want to like irrationally like follow, you know, we had it a little bit with Darren Williams, but I'll have it back.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, do you have any last thoughts on the coaching vacancy at the U? That's my last question for you.
Well, I heard our old friend Larry Krystkowiak.
Krystkowiak?
Krystkowiak? I don't know. Yeah.
Former old Jazz player.
Can I tell you a story about that man? I had a...
please.
When I was in...
anytime you have a good Larry Krystkowiak story,
I'm interested. Yeah, a few years ago when I was attending UVU here, I was living just down the street, I started this little thing where I'd go to, whenever I was at Walmart, I'd buy a really cheap pack of basketball cards and I taped them to my wall, and I had a whole wall covered with basketball cards from anywhere from the early 90s to the early 2000s. And my favorite one was a Larry Krystkowiak card from when he played for the Jazz, and he was going up for this dunk and had this absurd look on his face. That to me just solidifies in my mind that he is the coaching candidate for the Utah Utes. That man right there.
Makes sense. I mean, a Montana guy, you know, played for the Jazz. You know, he's coached in the NBA a little bit.
Really recruit that Montana base right there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. You know, you've got that whole Canada border. And all joking aside, Canada is turning into a basketball hotbed. Like, a lot of big recruits are coming out of Canada right now. So
Steve Nash's brother? I mean, who are we talking about here?
I don't know their name. But, you know, maybe there are some hidden gems in the, like, Manitoba, Winnipeg, north, the Dakotas.
Yeah. Montana is basically Canada. So you're absolutely right there.
No, it'll be interesting. The other thing, though, I'm interested to see what happens on the BYU side
with
Dave Rose. Because, you know, there was that interview that was posted where he was anything but committal about his future with BYU. Yeah. And I've heard that he wasn't happy with the way things went down with the West Coast Conference and things. But there are some good teams in the West Coast Conference, obviously, with Gonzaga and St. Mary's and a few, but those gyms are tiny. It's going to be so odd to go from playing in the Pit and playing in these big state school arenas, you know, to little tiny private schools that have 3,000 people in the.
Yeah, it really is too bad for them because the Mountain West has just been, especially this year,
great
they're a great league and they'll look to continue to be a great league.
And
so,
my last comment on that is there was an article written by somebody in the Denver Post, and I'm blanking on his name, which is super professional of me, but I don't really want to shout it out. But he wrote kind of an homage to the demise of the West of the Mountain West.
Mm.
Which it's not dead yet. It's still a viable league. It's just is basically dead is what he's saying.
Yeah.
But he said that BYU was showing hypocrisy by disciplining Brandon Davies and yet turning their back on the people in the Mountain West, which is such a horrible, the logic there is just so ridiculous and convoluted that it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But I just thought, how can you ignore the fact that the Mountain West did nothing for Utah or BYU but hold them down? I mean, Utah is, putting up, undefeated seasons and going to these bowl games and all this. And meanwhile, you can't even get an HD feed of their games.
Yeah.
BYU, the same thing, gets onto this scene and, you have to search on channel like 7324 on a, it's ridiculous. So to say, that they're turning their back on the Mountain West. The Mountain West never did anything for them but hobble them. So
no, it's
good
it's
riddance.
Good riddance to the Mountain.
That's
I think
right.
we can all. That's one thing Utah and BYU fans can all hold hands in harmony and sing from the mountaintops that the Mountain will be dead.
Yeah, and this is really the last thing. As long as we're going to talk about Mormon hoops for a second, I think we need to acknowledge the fact that BYU Hawaii made it to the Division II championship on Saturday.
Great job.
National televised. Comedy of errors down the stretch, and they ended up losing, which was a sad thing. But then also Southern Virginia College, also a little Mormon school, won. It's not like the NIA championship, but there's another kind of league for tiny little schools like that. And they won that. And two of their main players were transfers from BYU Hawaii. So it was probably, you have to say, the best year for Mormon hoops in history, right?
I think
you'd have to put it right up there with like the 1955 NIT championship, right?
Yeah, you'd have to put it up there.
And there was the time that the Uruguayan national team won the Pan American Championship in like 1947 with an LDS missionary playing.
Oh, wow. I can honestly say I'd never heard that
my
story.
My facts are kind of wrong, but I'll get that one.
An actual active missionary playing for the national team.
For the Uruguayan national team.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'll get more info. That one, that's a little teaser.
Yeah, that's a teaser for next time.
All two people who care. Yeah.
all two people who are still listening to this podcast are just super psyched.
My facts were horrible there, but I'll do a little research and I'll have that one prepared. Nobody cares, but we'll do.
Great.
Anyway, Justin, good stuff. Thanks for dropping in. I also want to give a shout out to the Utah Valley University Digital Media Program, who've been nice enough to let us use their studio for these podcasts.
They've been great. The best university in the state.
I'm
biased, but I'll say it.
Proud Wolverine in the house. And then also Jonathan Knudsen doing production. Thank you, Jonathan. All right, we'll be back next week. You can find this on iTunes and also on Salt City Hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at Salt City Hoops. And you can follow Justin at JH Justin on Twitter and also on Jazz Hype. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.